It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running on this, the fifth day of June 2018. I'm going to go out on a limb and say the second loveliest day of 2018 thus far, behind yesterday, which was behind one sometime back in May or something. But yeah, an absolutely lovely day, a gorgeous day for swinging the weed eater. And I'm just kind of, I got a bunch of grass clippings here, hither and thither, and well, it just feels really good, and it's been a lovely day. And hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you would like to take part in the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. I'm told that the Man Cave is an auto repair shop today. Good day to get your grease fittings checked. If you jump in, you'll be met by the likes of VP Blom and myself, as well as longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave, as well as midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan. So just go to HeadOn.live, click on the chat room icon, pop right in. You'll be welcomed, and I think you'll probably have a pretty good time. Absolutely. I am told we are loud and clear aboard the Titanic Horn catamaran on both audio streams. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. So that's a pretty good start, and I'm very happy to hear it. Of course, we begin, it is, well. Happy birthday indeed to Ms. Karen, the lovely Ms. Karen, down in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, the kind and loving spouse to all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Happy birthday, Karen. I hope Steve and little Cletus and little Twiggy do something wonderful for you, or have done something wonderful for you today. For you, do something wonderful for them each and every day. Happy birthday, Karen. At the beginning of every program, you know, this is a listener-supported effort. And at the beginning of every program, I try to make sure that we thank the people as members of the overnight crew, helped to keep the program on the air and provide, all together, about a week's worth of the programming that keeps this little operation chugging along and has for lo these many years. So thank you to our subscribers. Thanks go out to thanks go out to Kevin, in our buddy in Colorado Springs, who jumped in last night and wanted to help finish off Mike in Cascadia's challenge, as well as do something in memory for the dearly departed Punky. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very kindly. Kevin even set up a new subscription. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you to Roland out in Texas. Thank you very kindly. And thank you to Roberto. Thank you, Roberto, so very much. Thanks as well going out to James in Illinois. Thanks very much indeed. And it being the 5th of the month, thanks go out as well to our Patreon subscribers. So thanks very much to Terrace and to Scott and to Horst and Nick. Thanks to Brother Deacon Asa. Thanks to Barbara. Thanks to the Nubian. Thanks to Stephen, another member of the Fraternity of Steve. Thanks to Alec. Thanks to Carl. Thank you, Ron. Thank you to Brother Usher Steve in New York. Thank you to Karen out in California. Thank you to Barb. Thanks to Kimberly. Thanks to Jeremy up in Vermont. Thanks to Frank, the originator of the magnificent Fab Machine, which each and every evening helps bring you this program. Thank you to Matthew. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Rocky. Thank you, Rico, up in DeBerg. Thank you to Jim, and thank you to Greg. Thank you to Irwin. Thanks, Irwin, very kindly. Irwin's working on joining us on the front porch. Thank you to David. Thanks, David, and thank you to Olds. And thank you to Robin. Thank you, one and all. Those are our Patreon subscribers. Remember, the distinction between a PayPal subscriber and a Patreon subscriber is that the Patreon subscribers, well, they come out on the first of the month, like clockwork, and the PayPal subscribers come out on the day on which they subscribed. So that's the distinction between the two. The Patreon is out there primarily for those who despise PayPal, and that makes things a little better that way. Thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers. And I guess I should mention that we do try to make things easy. So we're also set up at Vimeo. Venmo. There, that's, yeah. It all gets so confusing after a while, but Venmo, V-E-N-M-O. Trying to make it possible for those who want to support the program to do so in the means which best suits their preferences. And, of course, there's always the United States Postal Service. I haven't mentioned that in a while, but if you'd like to help out via the USPS, then checks and money orders could be sent, made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I never see him. That's what Boss Man Wayne takes care of. And that address is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801. And if you want to do that and you send me a note, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne about it, and he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck, the big red truck, and he only has to take his handy-dandy axe handle with him in case he runs into the exalted clip-clop Kleagle dragon wizard of the clan, who also get their mail there at that location. Okay? So thanks, everybody. That's how we keep the program on the air alongside, until such time as we have $410 a month subscribers. That's how we keep the program on the air. Alongside what happens on a nightly basis. And the nightly fundraising goal this evening is, we didn't quite make our nut last night. So that being the case, the goal this evening is $350. One at $350, Mr. Soros, or variations on the theme. No challenges on the table or anything like that. Just we need to raise $350 this evening so that I can go into a frenzy of bill paying for the first of the month, because this is the first week of June 2018. Oh, by the way, a little update from the past weekend. Old-timers' tales that I've heard tell of over the years once again came true. I've heard for years that if you've got something you want to do, like a wedding or a picnic or a family reunion or something, and you want to absolutely make sure that you're going to have a dry day to do it on, you set it for the first Saturday in June here in central Appalachia, particularly this part of West Virginia. And while it might rain a little in the morning, or it might rain a little toward evening, the bulk of the day will be precipitation-free. And I can proudly announce that just because we didn't have a picnic or a wedding or a family reunion or a funeral or anything, it did work out that way again this past Saturday, the second day of June. So for those of you who think that someday you might like to come to West Virginia, or maybe come rock climbing, or mountain biking, or whitewater rafting, or fishing, or anything like that, kayaking at Summersville Lake. You can always count on the first Saturday in June. Yeah, maybe someday when this is like a humongous program, we'll have a horn in West Virginia on the first Saturday in June. But the first Saturday in June is it's like clockwork. And it has thus so remained. Well, it's Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Remember, on Titanic Tuesday, we celebrate instances of Titanic intellect hereabouts. Titanic right-wing intellect. The name of the day comes from something that happened years ago now, shrouded in the mists of time, when once upon a time there was a morning monotone over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, who would take to the airwaves and boldly read the newspaper in his monotone to his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers. His name was Steve. And one day, and it was our buddy Jim who heard it and told us about it, one day, Steve, who was not a member of the fraternity of Steve, he's an anti-Steve. He's not on the air anymore. But one day, Steve, in his monotone, took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, who asked, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I used to see them back when I was down in the mines a-digging of the coal, and they'd be right there in the top, and you could see them, clams and oysters and all kinds of things. How come it is? Because, Steve, we ain't nowhere's near the beach." To which Steve replied in that magnificent monotone that could put a speed freak to sleep,
"Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates."
Mm-hmm. And in that moment was born the idea of Titanic Tuesday. Still no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic kumquat juicer, but we remember, yea verily, each and every Tuesday, the Titanic wisdom of the right wing. And we try to celebrate it. We try to point it out. we try to make it apparent and obvious for far and wide. And as a practitioner of right-wing titanic intellect, you're really going to have to get up early in the morning to beat Neil Tapio. For instance, if he set up he could set up a website, tapio.ca, tapioca. Yeah, mm-hmm. Never cared much for tapioca. It's kind of like eating frogs' eggs. Neil Tapio is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republican who wants to be a member, who wants to win the Republican nomination in South Dakota for the only member that state has of the House of Representatives. In fact, if there was a minimum number minimum population number required to have a member of the House of Representatives, South Dakota probably wouldn't have a member. But yes, Neil Tapio is challenging a few other Republicans for the nomination there. And a while back, he got caught in the midst of what we could call a white wing fantasy of what would make for the perfect campaign. It was back in the middle of May when the Huffington Post got hold of some audio of God-fearing, upstanding, et cetera, Republican Neil Tapio, a member of the South Dakota State Senate, in which he described the circumstances under which he thought he would be swept to victory in the primary in South Dakota and onward to the general election, at which point he would enter triumphantly into the House of Representatives. What are those circumstances? Well, Neil Tapio back in May said, "I can start in a little town like Aberdeen outside of the media glare. I can move it to Watertown, practice a little more, and then by the time I get to Sioux Falls, I will have said this thousands of times. And then my opponent's just going to be so far behind, they won't even realize we're running for the same race. And then all that has to happen is that there will be one more terrorist attack between now and then, and I'll be the Trump effect, I'll be the candidate. That's the way I look at it." Yeah, because Republicans. Yeah, just sitting there fantasizing about all the dead, bleeding bodies that could sweep him on a red tide to the culmination of his political hopes and dreams. Now, here's the fun part. When Tapio got wind of the fact that other people knew what he'd said, he didn't deny saying it. I mean, there was sort of a recording. No, not sort of. There really was a recording. Instead, he got, of course, righteously indignant, saying, "To suggest I'm advocating for a terror attack is a disgusting smear, and you should be ashamed of yourself. Anyone that would even suggest that is a vile and disgusting individual, not worthy of being taken seriously. Terror has something to do with Islam. Nobody dares say this in public. I do.
Once again, his words were, "Then all that has to happen is that there will be one more terrorist attack between now and then, and I will be the, just by the Trump effect, I will be the candidate. That's the way I look at it."
But I wasn't advocating for a terror attack. I was just pointing out that if one was to happen to come along, I would try to capitalize on it and monetize it and use it to my personal advantage while people were weeping and wailing and bawling and crying in the streets. That's all I was saying. People don't deserve to be taken seriously if they say that I was advocating for it, because I'm not a Muslim. I just think one had come in real handy.
Well, like I said, that happened back in mid-May. And I didn't cover it at the time. I mean, you know, South Dakota. But the goddess of irony works in mysterious ways. And so even though I didn't cover it back in mid-May, the goddess of irony made sure that Neil Tapioca stayed with it, that he didn't relent in his determination to be as odious a human being as he might possibly be. And so recently, in his campaigning out in those little hinterland towns he mentioned, you know, Springfield and whatnot, he said, quote, now, and by way of setting the scene, if you will, there are a lot of indigenous people in South Dakota. It's kind of a wonder and a testament to the grit and determination of their spirit that there are, considering how hard white people tried to make them go extinct over the course of a couple of hundred years. But they're still there, and I'm very glad. And they've probably got as much determination or more than the average human being, because they live in circumstances, you know, of largely of white America's making, that would cause white America to break down and fall apart and just give up. But that wasn't what Neil Tapio was talking about in his Titanic remarks. He said, and I quote, "The majority of people living on Indian reservations are victims of incest and molestation. That's why they got all the suicide, violence, and addiction." No, really? There aren't heart-rending problems on Native American reservations that arise out of things that white people have done over the years, or the fact that indigenous people were pushed onto reservations in direct contravention of a way of life that had obtained with them for some 10,000 years or anything like that. Oh, hell no. No, it's just, I guess he thinks that indigenous people can't help having sex with family. And they just can't help molesting children. Me, I think he's confusing indigenous people with Republicans. Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Chairman Harold Frazier responded, speaking to Native News Online, "I'm deeply offended by these remarks about our children.
The children that struggle every day with poverty and broken families do not need a desperate politician desperately trying to gain votes by pandering to the bigots and racists to remind them of their predicament. Well said, well said, Chairman Frazier. However, in all fairness, who do you expect to vote for Neil Tapio if not bigots and racists? He's running as a Republican. That's his base. But then again, if you're a Republican in South Dakota, maybe trying to climb up on the backs of Native people and ride it all the way to November while you're waiting for that one good terrorist attack, maybe that's a viable campaign strategy. Sad. But I'd suggest you jot down the name of Neil Tapio. Because anybody this stupid is almost guaranteed to keep doubling down on the said stupid. And I would not be surprised if he didn't have something odious to say about, oh, women or people of color or women who are people of color. The opportunities are near endless. Scott writes in, regarding South Dakota politician who's giving indigenous people a hard time, white male speaks with forked tongue. Same story, different day. Different day, well, maybe different century too, but same, same. And here then, leaving South Dakota and wandering down to that peninsula in the southeastern corner of the United States, which within 100 years or so will be underwater. A manifestation of more titanic intellect. And oddly enough, this is a nomination not relative to the actual event itself, but to how it was covered. Are you familiar, and I'm sure you are, with the concept of doxing? Doxing is something that has arisen in the internet age, whereby people that, and it's mostly right-wingers who do this, of course, because Jesus, and whatever. Doxing is a concept or a thing whereby someone will put out someone's personal information and then scores and hordes of hateful little bigoted racist Republican white wing nuts, all suffering, of course, from economic anxiety, will then torture and torment the subject of the doxing. Well, there's another concept out there called swatting. And this again is a surreptitious bit of nastiness. It arose among vile little white wingers in the far and spider-infested corners of the internet who participate in things like Gamergate, which was a full-on attack on women relative to the video gaming industry. You might recall, because I covered it on the program some months back, it was last year, Wichita, Kansas. A couple of bowels, got into an argument on Call of Duty World War II online, and one set out to swat the other, and to swat is to call local emergency response and say that some sort of crime is happening at a given location. Usually it's a hostage situation, because that then gets the SWAT team and the helicopter and the machine guns and the armored personnel carriers and, you know, the full murderous regalia of law enforcement out to a given location. Well, a gamer in California was trying to swat the other gamer, and instead swatted a young man named Andrew Finch of Wichita, Kansas. Police showed up at his home and promptly murdered him in cold blood. Well, swatting is now part of what we would call broader internet troll culture. And today, David Hogg and his family of Parkland, Florida, were swatted. Don't know who, but a call was placed to emergency services in Parkland, Florida, declaring that there was a hostage situation and giving the address of David Hogg's home. In true form, the SWAT team showed up. The Action News team coverage, you decide, eye in the sky, helicopter swept into the air, as did SWAT helicopters. And they surrounded the house, and they went into the house. Fortunately, David Hogg and his mother were not home. They were actually in Washington, D.C. For David Hogg to be presented with the RFK Humanitarian Award. But, yes, the Broward County Sheriff's Department sent out its SWAT team and did exactly as the person seeking to SWAT David Hogg had hoped they would do. They behaved exactly in predictable fashion. The only difference being that they did not gun down David Hogg in cold blood like they did with the individual in Wichita, Kansas. Yep. So the Titanic part of all of this is the way that the for-profit media have described the act of swatting, referring to it in story after story after story, describing swatting as a, and this is a quote, prank. A prank. No. A prank is when you call somebody's house up and say, is your refrigerator running? And they say, well, yes. And, well, you better catch it. It's going to get away. Or do you have Prince Albert in a can? Well, let him out. Pranks are stupid and juvenile and supposed to be harmless, albeit probably mean-spirited and occasionally messy. The classic bucket of paint above a door coming to mind. Or cellophaning a toilet seat being another classic. Trying to arrange for the SWAT team to murder an individual in cold blood is not a prank. The caller had told the SWAT team someone broke into the home with an AR-15 rifle and was holding the family at gunpoint. Mercifully, no one was in the home at the time that the SWAT team surrounded it and then entered it. A prank. I first read the story this morning via Action Local News, local ABC 10 in Florida, who sent their Action Local News helicopter up and recorded it all in Coral Springs, Florida. That's the Dateline by Jeff Tavs and executive producer Alex Finney, reporter. And it gave the same basics that I've just given you. Local 10 News got hold of David Hogg when the news broke. David Hogg said, and the young man is showing himself to be quite the effective communicator. He said, "I think it's really a distraction from what we're trying to fix here, which is the massive gun violence epidemic in this country." A friend, he said, had called him to tell him about the swatting. And there it is in the Action Local News 10 article. Swatting is the action of making a prank emergency call to bring about a response of armed law enforcement officers. Well, as you know, from everybody from Laura Ingraham to Dana Lush to Coleon Noir and Greg Stinkfield and Ted Pantslode Nugent and all kinds of National Ruble, I mean Rifle Association scumbags, have attacked David Hogg for having the temerity to exercise his rights to free speech to advocate against more students being murdered in schools. The National Rifle Association does not share, apparently, David Hogg's desire for more students not to be murdered in schools. The Action News 10 local ABC news story says, since the shootings at Stoneman Douglas, Hogg has been a prominent advocate for gun safety. However, Hogg has been a lightning rod for controversy, as some, that's your Fox News style book there, as some do not approve of his methods, such as holding a die-in protest at a Coral Springs Publix last week. Hogg said further that the swatting of him and his family was, quote, evidence of the fact of how many people are trying to stop us from what we're trying to do, which is stop these kids from dying. He said, "I want people to know we're just trying to advocate for change. There's going to be people against it and always will be, but we're going to keep going no matter what. Nothing will stop us." And since it's a Florida station and it's local, I did what I always advise people not to do. I just thought I'd see what the comments section looked like, because bless their hearts over there at Action News Local Eyewitness Team Coverage ABC 10, they didn't turn the comments off on their post. Because, of course, you have to give the gun humpers a place to vent. Yes, Brother Deacon Asa, you're right. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, swatting is emerging as the new favorite tool of the alt-Nazi crowd, much of whom overlap with the bro-gamer crowd. Yeah, it's another one of those Venn diagrams we're always talking about. Let's see here. Ronnie Anthony Pate, ha, 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 I hate that little twit. Betsy Verloop, great name, says, Hogg isn't working for school safety. He is working to appeal the Second Amendment. He is anti-American nut job. Thomas Stout said, Hogg kid brought this on himself with his foul tongue and leftist attitude. This was bound to happen. More in store for him during his lifetime of activism. So, apparently Thomas Stout, good God-fearing patriotic American, thinks that if you have a leftist attitude, the police should be called to come to your house and murder you in cold blood. Gregory McCarty says, this Soros-funded insect needs to be driven to earth. Insect. How about that? Then there's Bobby Z. Hogg won the career lottery when those kids got killed. After Broward government failed to do their jobs, he was nowhere close enough to be called a survivor. But now he's trading on that credential as part of a well-funded leftist machine to have government take away your rights. Daisy D. applied some deductive reasoning to the situation and said, the little creep probably called in the fake report himself. Then there's Big Mama. Boss Hogg is a retired FBI agd, AGT. Pretty young to be retired and a pretty expensive home for a public serpent. Then there's Unapologetic America. Really, Tavarich? Attention, Hogg and his family got what they deserved. Too bad he and his former very fake news CNN mommy weren't home to enjoy all the excitement. It's a shame Camera Hogg was in Wash, D.C. had he been at home. I'm sure Twig Boy would gleefully mugged for the liberal media outlets' live shots and spewed his DNC-supplied talking points lies. And what's with the Hogg house? Isn't it awfully ritzy for a public servant and former FBI feeble, bumbling, incompetent crisis simulator? Hashtag 2A... Hashtag shall not be infringed. Hashtag MAGA. Hashtag KAG 2020. Ruth Gauthier says Hogg Oss, a con man. He graduated from Redondo Hills High School in California, class of 2015, in the yearbook clear as day. He wanted to be an actor. Looks like he is. Why was an adult man allowed to attend high school? And, you know, I can click show more. Lucy says, it sure is interesting that this fake report was identified as a hoax so quickly. No shots fired, no doors kicked in, no windows broken, no dog shot, not even a single rubber bullet. Sure looks like Boss Hogg's white privilege is showing again. K-1 King, C-A-J-U-A-N. The socialist does not look like he comes from the lower class. Nice house phony. JRW says, flush the hogwash with his anti-gun propaganda and lies. Bill Eubank says, this little potty-mouthed punk is an irrelevant far-left piece of garbage. The little termite should be thrown in jail where he belongs. Unapologetic America, Really, Tovaric? Says, don't lock him up. He will enjoy all the down-low sex in prison. I didn't edit that. There was not a single comment defending the young man and his family's right not to be murdered in cold blood by police as the result of a false report of criminal activity. Not one. And it goes on and on and on. But that was no prank. That was, in fact, attempted murder. They wanted people like those who commented on the Action Local News team coverage ABC You Decide news page. They wanted to see his bloodied body carried out of the house with a sheet over. Because their argument for the Second Amendment is basically, don't take my guns or I will shoot somebody. I can't carry on an intellectual smarty pants talk thing. So I will just say I will shoot people. Because freedom, MAGA. That's America in 2018. Hoping to see a teenage boy and his family massacred over nothing more than a political disagreement. Jack in Shreveport. Dumbass Stout comment. Dude's comment about Hogg bringing it on himself is analogous to rape victims bringing it on themselves by the clothes they're wearing. Yes, how was he dressed? But there's an ancillary question here, and that is, we've been told that the government is spying on everybody. How is it that there's no update saying that someone has been hauled into custody as of this hour? And since this is, after all, a capitalist country, how much money did it cost to send the entire freaking SWAT team out? How much does it cost to run the Broward County SWAT chopper for an hour? I don't know the answer, but I'm guessing it probably goes into four digits, the whole thing. It probably, maybe even five digits. And I'll keep an eye on the story as best I can. But anybody want to place any bets on anyone being held responsible for this? Because, well, I can't afford to bet that they will. I'd be happy to be wrong, but I'm not optimistic enough to place a wager. And then, you know, just a little note for Team News Action Coverage Eyewitness ABC 10. Why do you leave that filth up? Presumably a bunch of adults making various and sundry arguments in favor of the death of a young man who has done nothing more than do what every American is guaranteed the right to do, which is to speak freely. what, except for the fact that they provide us a living, breathing example of how toxic the white wing is in this country, what civic good is accomplished by providing a forum for these hate-filled, ignorant, grammatically challenged morons to spew their filth all over the internet? Why provide them a group conversation where they can reinforce each other's biases and bigotries and hatreds? Well, see, Lee's asking the same question I am. Why is the caller not held responsible for placing the false call? Can't the police geolocate the call to see if the person is even in the area? You'd think. But so far, nothing to indicate that that has been accomplished. And David Hogg is probably right. They're trying to distract people from the March for Our Lives Road to Change, which we announced yesterday. It's a push to get the highest numbers of youth voters ever in American history to turn out to vote this coming November. Yeah, Marty says, why leave it up? So people around the bloody world can read to see what the U.S. has become and prove what they have likely suspected about us. good point, Scott. Scott points out, Action News 10 commenters to Michael Hogg, aspiring Trump speechwriters all. Yeah. But David Hogg is not the only member of the Parkland group in the news today. No. Fred Gutenberg. His 14-year-old daughter, Jamie, was slaughtered on Valentine's Day at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And he offered comments today, interviewed by Raw Story. He offered comments today regarding remarks made by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who incidentally has no experience with education whatsoever, but simply bought herself a cabinet position, sister of Eric Prince, notorious mercenary capitalist. And, of course, both of them Christians. Betsy DeVos spoke to senators today. She was there to talk about the commission to study school safety protocols that followed in the wake of the Parkland massacre. In regard to the question of the role that guns play in these horrors, the Associated Press noted that Betsy DeVos said, that is not part of the commission's charge, per se. We're actually studying school safety and how we can ensure our students are safe at school. This caused Vermont Democrat Senator Pat Leahy to say, so you're studying gun violence but not considering the role of guns. Right. Like I said, Raw Story reached out to Fred Gutenberg, who said, well, why would you look at guns? Is it too soon to say she's the most incompetent Secretary of Education ever, or even the most incompetent official in this entire administration? She just gave this country the reason they need to show up to the polls in record numbers. She just gave the country the reason to know that right now we have a government that doesn't care about our safety. They care about the NRA and the gun lobby, but they don't want to talk about safety. And you know what? Fred Gutenberg is right. The Republican Party, quite honestly, doesn't care how many children are slaughtered in how many schools, as long as they keep getting the big bags of money from the gun lobby and from the National Rifle Association. By the way, Louise Mensch and Dana Lush got into it on Twitter the other night. Louise Mensch referred to the NRA as the National Russia Association. Louise does not understand that it is not the National Russia Association. It is the National Ruble Association. Because it's about the rubles, not the country. And Dana Lush about had a baby right there on Twitter. Oh, there was a name calling and carrying on fit to beat the band. Twitter's such fun. In answer to the question posed, is Betsy DeVos the worst education secretary ever? Marty notes, well, there was William Bennett. He was as bad, if not worse, than DeVos. That's true. That was the one who said if you really wanted to do something about poverty, you needed to abort the little black babies. That was him, wasn't it, Marty? Have I got that right? I think I've got that right. Oh, and a note of some consequence here as we wrap up the filibobster. David Koch, of Chuck and Dave fame, is stepping down. Apparently, Dave is not feeling any too good. He's retiring from Koch Industries, Dave is, and stepping down from all the vile, evil machinations that the Koch brothers engage in on a political basis. Dave is 78. And he made it to the fall meeting, but not the winter meeting of the Koch cabal. He and his brother are tied at like 8th for richest person in America at something like $60 billion each. His brother Chuck, who's older than Dave, wrote a memo dated yesterday, said, David has always been a fighter and is dealing with this challenge in the same way. Stepping down as chairman for Americans for Prosperity. Described in the news story I'm looking at and struggling not to laugh, the Reuters copy. David will also step down from his role as chairman for Americans for Prosperity, a grassroots conservative group. Yeah, grassroots. roots. An AstroTurf conservative group, because, see, there's nothing grassroots about Americans for Prosperity, because when you got a gazillion dollars or so behind you, you're not grassroots anymore. No. The news comes a day after the brothers said they will launch a multi-million dollar campaign to oppose President Donald Trump's tariffs and to champion free trade. Yeah. Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. So, in an effort to rehabilitate them, Reuters also says, the brothers also strongly support legislation that seeks to protect dreamers, people brought illegally to the United States as children, from deportation. Oh, gosh, you'd never know from this copy that these two sons of Satan are almost single-handedly responsible for a vast degree of the right-wing nastiness that obtains in this country. So, you know, all I can say to good old Dave Koch is, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. That's all, Dave. Oh, we haven't gotten there yet. That's a party. That's a party to be had later. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Trying too hard, Ron asks. While I generally find myself on the same page as you, Bob, I think this body neutral thing is a bridge too far. A bowel as opposed to an asshole? Really? Same general real estate, I'd say. Samantha Bee can use that word that rhymes with runt. See you next Tuesday. Yet you often use Spicoli saying you dick. I know, and that's the thing, Ron. I've gone back and forth on using that. Sometimes I forget that I've committed not to use it, and I use it anyway, so that's my bad on me. Same, I'd say, says Ron. Maybe it's just me, but it seems you're trying too hard to fix something that really isn't broken. Name-calling is supposed to be offensive. I just say use it only as a last resort. And I understand that. However, there's a deeper reason behind the question, and that's why I also used nostril, or I don't know, ear canal. You ear canal. Because I'm trying to figure out what it is that makes something that is so uniquely human to all of us so patently noxious. You E. coli! I guess we could just say it's cultural and linguistic habit. And of course, I guess we're all waiting with bated breath for the results of the California primary. It would be nice to think that people like Dana Rohrabacher, Russia's favorite member of Congress, and Devin Nunes, and a couple of other scumbag gut buckets, won't get passed today, but it's probably too much to hope for. But, given the time difference, I don't reckon we'll see anything resembling results for hours upon hours upon hours. But maybe a miracle of human making will transpire. There we go. Okay, and Scott's working with the theme here. Why not call him a suspicious polyp? You polyp! That would actually... Well, wait a minute. I kind of like polyp. You polyp. Yeah, that one's worth hanging on to. We should maybe use it from time to time. God damn that Ivanka Trump, that disgusting polyp. Or would she be a polyp from a polyp? But you see what I'm... Yes. So, that's the filibobster. It being a Tuesday and all, we've got the Green News Report coming up with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. If you would like, you may feel free to engage in some conversation today. By the way, note coming in from Mike in Cascadia in regard to Neil Tapio. South Dakota. When I was a kid growing up in Billings, Montana, Mike says, we traveled to South Dakota and the Black Hills for a family vacation in 1974. My dad, a teacher, spent his summers working for the city of Billings as the summer groundskeeper at the local ballpark. My dad, 50% Lebanese, would work all summer just in shorts and he would get extremely tan. My mom, Norwegian, was very fair-skinned. So we were in Spearfish, South Dakota, and we went into a cafe to eat breakfast. When we walked in, it was like the movie where everything stopped and everyone just stared at us. We sat down, and we waited, and waited, and waited. For service, which never came, finally my dad got up and went behind the counter. He grabbed two cups and a pot of coffee and brought it back to our table. At that point, the manager came out and asked us to leave. He said they wouldn't serve a biracial couple. They thought my dad was Latino since he was so tan. I was 9 years old and still remember it vividly. My dad insisted we would eat there, and we did. But they glared at us the whole time, and they were very rude. When we left and drove away, my mom cried in the car. So there's South Dakota, 1970s vintage. There's probably an aspect of that, Mike, that is South Dakota, 2010s vintage. Because after all, you've still got the Neil Tapios out there, and all the, well, saying all the people in regard to South Dakota is probably a little bit superfluous, but, and the people who will vote for him. Jesus. Thanks, Mike. What a hell of a story. I'm surprised they didn't refuse to refuse service on the basis that maybe your dad looked like a member of the local native population, and we can't have it, right. Ah, Todd, you are good, Todd, indeed, but I get your point, but I ain't sharing. Because I'm just not ready for the deluge of email. But suffice to say, the former and not the latter. That was cryptic, wasn't it? Yes. So anyway, we've got a break coming up. We got $350 to raise this evening. We are at zero. But hopefully we will not stay that way. Because filing those zeros is how, we, you know, one of these days we tune in and there's no program. But, you know, 10 at 35, 35 at 10, etc. And hopefully it all works out. The button is over at headon.live. And, well, feel free to use it.
So courtesy of our buddy Ron in Raleigh, a bumper in honor of today's California jungle primary. Yes. Want to jump into the conversation, 304-574-8178, toll-free from anywhere in North America, Canada, the United States, or Mexico, 844-843-4676, and of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet that you can get out from behind the firewall. Well, Bob Kincaid Horn gets you right into the program. According to Sparky, the password is Lemon Haze. Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Walking through forests of palm tree hearts, scoff at the monkeys who live in their dark tents. Down by the water hole, drunk every Friday, eating their nuts, saving their raisins for Sunday. Lions and tigers who wait in the shadows, they're fast but they're lazy, and sleep in green meadows. Well, that's hunger in the jungle. Well, that's all right by me, yes. Well, I'm a tiger when I want love, but I'm a snake if we disagree. Just say a word and the boys will be right there with claws at your back to send the chill through the night. Hey, is it so frightening to have me at your shoulder? Thunder and lightning couldn't be bolder. I'll write on your tombstone, I thank you for dinner. This game that we animals play is the winner. Well, let's bungle in the jungle. Well, that's all right by me. Yes, I'm a tiger when I want love. I'm a snake if we disagree. Snakes in the grass. He's a lover of life, but a player of pawns. Yes, the king on his sunset lies waiting for dawn to light up his jungle as players resume. The monkeys see willing to strike up the tune. Let's bungle in the jungle. Well, that's all right by me.
It's Tuesday, June 5, 2018.
Lifting the restrictions on clean, very clean coal. We're going to put the miners back to work.
Trump administration moves toward unprecedented bailout of failing coal plants.
What we're seeing with this decision here is that it's given the lie to the idea that the Trudeau government is really serious about tackling climate change.
Canada's prime minister nationalizes controversial tar sands pipeline. New renewable electricity surpasses new fossil fuel generation. Plus, G7 nations subsidize fossil fuels to the tune of $100 billion a year, despite pledges.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This guy could tweet about the Hawaii volcano. Would he make it about him? I'm orange and gassy. Where's my headline?
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of volcanoes, we've all been watching this volcano in Hawaii, and sort of out of nowhere, a deadly eruption down in Guatemala.
Yes, you're right. Down in Hawaii, residents living on the flanks of the Kilauea volcano have had some time to evacuate in advance of slow-moving lava that's destroyed nearly 120 homes and a geothermal power plant. However, many were not so fortunate in Guatemala, where the aptly named Fuego volcano erupted violently and suddenly on Sunday with a pyroclastic flow that has reportedly engulfed several villages and killed more than 60 people as of airtime. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., President Trump is trying a new tack to bail out financially struggling coal and nuclear power plants that are unable to compete against cheaper renewables and natural gas. He's ordered Energy Secretary Rick Perry to find ways to save those uneconomical coal and nuclear plants from retirement. And now a leaked administration proposal calls for asserting emergency federal powers to force grid operators to purchase electricity from coal-fired power plants, regardless of the cost, under the pretense of national energy security. It would be an unprecedented intervention into U.S. energy markets that would raise rates on consumers and increase air pollution.
And for those of you who forgot, this would also be the government picking winners and losers, specifically picking coal and nuclear as the winners, and everyone else apparently as the losers.
Yep, and of that new proposal, the nation's largest grid operator, PJM Interconnection, said in a statement, quote, "There is no such need for any such drastic action," and warned that this kind of federal intervention would be damaging to the markets and costly to consumers.
And this is not necessarily going through. This is a draft plan from the Trump administration. They still have yet to announce officially this notion under national security measures?
Yes, it's still just a draft. We'll see if it stays that way. Meanwhile, in Canada, Indigenous tribes, environmental groups, and the province of British Columbia have all condemned Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's decision to purchase the Trans Mountain Pipeline System from Houston-based owner Kinder Morgan for $3.5 billion. Trudeau committed unspecified additional billions in taxpayer money to complete a stalled expansion of the pipeline as well. In an interview on the broadcast, Alex Dukas of the nonprofit group Oil Change International called the nationalization of the pipeline a betrayal of Trudeau's promises to act on climate change.
This is sort of how do we use every government lever at our disposal to support industry and to make sure that these projects go ahead, irrespective of the cost to the Canadian public and irrespective of the environmental and climate damage. They basically pulled one over on the Canadian government for a failing project that they knew wasn't going to get built.
Dukas says that both Trump and Trudeau now appear to be more alike than he had previously hoped.
They're both willing to step in and nationalize parts of the fossil fuel industry, but not for the reasons of a managed decline of the industry to help address climate change. No, it's to prop up the industry and keep the dollars flowing to the petrostate and to coal executives.
And now a new analysis finds that wealthy nations still spend more than $100 billion per year on government subsidies for fossil fuels, despite their pledges to end such subsidies by 2025. In a report released on Monday in advance of the G7 summit in Canada this week, the researchers said, quote, "Governments often say they have no public resources to support the clean energy transition. Yet Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and the United States have taken no steps to phase down the $100 billion a year in support for fossil fuels at home and abroad." Finally, some good news. Reuters reports that a record amount of renewable electricity capacity was installed worldwide last year, as the cost of wind and solar is now even more competitive with fossil fuels. The report found that in 2017, more new renewable energy capacity was added than new fossil fuel generation.
We'll take what we can get. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Twenty minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, the fifth day of June, 2018. I had a follow-up from Ron in Raleigh. I love these little exchanges we have during the program. Ron said, "Have you noticed that I use antiquated invective such as pillock, poltroon? For women, I might use round heels, gutter snipe, etc. The old words are the best words. However, Donald Trump is still, without a doubt, an asshole." Yeah, and more. Ever so much more. By the way, Keith pointing out, the last time I knew of flight cost for a helicopter was about $2,500 per hour. Not including the crew. That's been several years ago, though. So I think it's probably a safe bet that the swatting of David Hogg's home and family, even without calculating the manifest threats to he and his family's well-being, was a giant waste of Broward County and Florida and possibly even federal resources. We'll just wait and see if the little maggot who made the call gets caught, and if somewhere along the way they get billed for what they did. Titanic intellect. Yes. Everybody raise your hand if you know who Richard Grinnell is. Probably not one of those that comes immediately to mind. He's our ambassador to Germany, handpicked by Geezer Disgustus himself. And you know, because Steve Bannon, because deconstruction of the administrative state, because alt-right, who knows why, he accepted a request for an interview from that website that rhymes with light and fart. It happened this past weekend. And he managed to start create where one didn't necessarily exist, a significant problem. In the interview with the website that rhymes with light and fart, Ambassador Grinnell said, "I absolutely want to empower other conservatives throughout Europe, other leaders. I think there is a groundswell of conservative policies that are taking hold because of the failed policies of the left." Then he said the key issues for him were immigration and tax cuts and cutting red tape, that those are things that conservatives focus on. He went on to say that he really, really digs Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz. And, Chancellor Sebastian Kurz is chancellor because he decided to get down and wallow with the ultra-right-wing Freedom Party in Austria And it's, well, it's fact that the Freedom Party in Austria was founded by real live, no kidding, Nazis. Well, apparently somebody in Germany saw fit to translate the interview with that website that rhymes with light and fart into German. And not that it was entirely necessary to do so, because there are vast numbers of English speakers and English readers in Germany, as opposed to the paucity of even bilingual Americans. Because see, that ain't Americanly exceptional. No, not knowing nothing but American English. Mm-hmm. And well, doggone it, the Germans decided they didn't take too kindly to the U.S. ambassador to the Reich. I mean, that's just a word in German. That doesn't mean it, right. Government, state, right? But anyway, maybe is Germany a Reich? I don't. Do they use the word still? I don't know. But the German people were largely disgusted by what Ambassador Grinnell said. And in point of fact, a spokesperson for the German Foreign Ministry said that, well, you know, Grinnell's going to be having his first official visit Thursday, and he'll need to explain what he meant about all those conservatives. German Foreign Ministry said it was, quote, seeking clarification on whether the statements were actually made in the form they were given. Social Democratic Party delegate, member of the German U.S. Parliamentary Friendship Group, Metin Hakverdi, said, as a member of the SPD, a left party with a long, proud legacy of fighting together with the United States, both Nazis and communists, I'm irritated to hear from Ambassador Grinnell about our allegedly failed policies. The Germans are unfailingly polite. But when you piss one off, you will know. You won't have a hard time figuring it out. And the fact of the matter is, when he says that he wants to empower other conservatives throughout Europe, it's kind of hard to miss what he meant. Because the fact of the matter is, the left liberals are not in power in Germany. Angela Merkel is not some greenie. She has, in fact, taken no small amount of grief for how conservative she and her allies are. And then Grinnell doubled down. Oh, yes. I was talking with Allison earlier today, a friend, and she directed me to a story from The Telegraph in the UK, in which apparently Ambassador Grinnell, having peed all over German shoes, decided to up the ante or double down, whatever gambling phrase you prefer. By doing something that is not done. Diplomacy is the art of the done and the not done. In diplomacy, it really does matter whether or not you know which fork to use with the tiny shrimp and which fork goes with the great big oysters. It matters. And, you know, international incidents can foment therefrom. And Grinnell has pulled a real doozy. Because, you see, Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz will be visiting Berlin next week. And Richard Grenell, who apparently likes to play footsie with Nazis. Well, he decided to host a reception at the U.S. Embassy. For Chancellor, Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz. This has led decent Germans to note that Ambassador Grenell is messing in the internal affairs of Germany. And they would very much like to have an explanation. Der Spiegel magazine went so far as to say that Ambassador Grenell is behaving like an alternative chancellor to Frau Angela Merkel. Meanwhile, also of the left Social Democrats, the SPD, Martin Schulz, who was formerly that group's leader, said that Ambassador Grenell is behaving, quote, like a far-right colonial officer. Nobody in Germany has any doubt whatsoever what Herr Schulz means by that. And he doesn't mean it in a nice way. For instance, anybody who knows the conduct of the Germans in East Africa during the First World War knows, not the second, but the first, knows exactly what a far-right colonial officer means. And it is, like I said, done and not done. Well, the Telegraph article notes merely, it is highly unusual for ambassadors to entertain visiting heads of government, and the move has ruffled feathers in Berlin. But empowering conservatives across Europe clearly means that Ambassador Grenell, on behalf of the Trump regime, is trying to make neo-Nazis and proto-Nazis and Nazis in everything but name in Europe, the burgeoning fascist movement, stronger. And he's not alone. Oh, no. Because, among other things, hey, look, it's the Heritage Foundation. Over in Hungary, their president is a right-wing creep by the name of Viktor Orban. And Viktor Orban has a habit and a history of engaging in inflammatory anti-Semitic rhetoric. He has attacked the checks and balances system of the heretofore Hungarian government. He has moved to consolidate his own power, somewhat, say, like, what's his name, Erdogan in Turkey. Hell, if I was in Turkey, just referring to him as what's-his-name would probably be enough to get me killed. Great guy, that what's-his-name, Erdogan. Then again, he sent his thugs to beat up American citizens in Washington, D.C., and precious little to nothing was done about that. Well, enter the enter the Heritage Foundation. And one of those misanthropes over at that organization by the name of Mike Gonzalez. Who has declared that Viktor Orban is trying to, and this is a quote, replace the shipwreck of liberal democracy by building 21st century Christian democracy. Well, that's kind of a contradiction in terms. When he says 21st century Christian democracy, what he means is 21st century Christian theocracy. Mike Gonzalez refers to him as a maverick prime minister, and he's once again stirring the pot of goulash. Oh, the people that get hired on wingnut welfare at the Heritage Foundation. Stirring the pot of goulash. 4 years ago, Orban gave his critics ammunition when he said he was constructing an illiberal democracy. This month he doubled down, declaring liberal democracy dead and urging other European leaders to stop trying to revive the corpse. Liberal democracy, of course, is not liberal in the way that you and I in the United States understand the word liberal as juxtaposed versus conservative. It is a much broader political philosophy. But it does entail qualities of tolerance. It also entails a vigorous and vibrant welfare state in which people are not simply left to die because they're not fucking millionaires. But apparently it made Mike Gonzalez all tingly in his in his wingnut place when Orban, addressing the Hungarian parliament earlier, said, "Liberal democracy is no longer able to protect people's dignity, provide freedom, guarantee physical security, or maintain Christian culture. Some in Europe are still tinkering with it because they believe that they can repair it, but they fail to understand that it is not the structure that is defective. The world has changed." I'll be darned. Somehow I think Viktor Orban is not the first person to have made that "the world has changed" argument. I'm guessing that argument was probably made in, say, 1932. I'm guessing that argument was made in Spain and Italy in the 20s and you know, Germany. Orban continued, "We need to replace the shipwreck of liberal democracy by building 21st century Christian democracy." And see, that's one of the things that they hate about liberal democracy, the idea that maybe, governments should not be in the business of enforcing religion. This is the guy who wanted to erect barriers against immigration from the Syrian Holocaust. Mike Gonzalez, though, does continue to tingle. He writes, "When Europe was more or less coterminous with Christendom, that text was the Bible." Talking about issue of just what the motivating force is behind the idea of governance. "The culture that defined all the European nations, the paintings, the music, the festivals, the folk wisdom, was suffused with Christianity and its imagery. Greco-Judeo-Christian ethics." Oh, well, now we brought the Grecos in. "Ethics bonded Portuguese and Finns in the absence of DNA or language links." Bonded. Sure they did. Hey, Mike Gonzalez. You ever heard of the Middle Ages, buddy? You ever heard of the rise of the Renaissance? You ever heard of the Hundred Years' War? Ever heard of the Peace of Westphalia? No? Well, I bet he has, and he knows why it was all wrong.
As Europe has de-Christianized, at best it has evolved into a values-free, empty husk. At worst, it has become supranational entity that pretends adherence to hate speech codes, mandatory work rules, open borders, and coercion of everyone into publicly affirming lifestyles they find repugnant. All violations of different freedoms, and ironically of liberalism itself, now form European values. Oddly enough, the one thing that Mike Gonzalez doesn't point out is that a de-Christianized Europe, if such a thing exists, is also the post-World War II Europe that has managed not to cast itself into a self-made abattoir as it has done every few decades, oh, say, for the last 1,945 fucking years. Because that's what a Christian Europe was, a charnel house. Good Christ Almighty, in the years following the collapse of the Last Crusade, what the so-called companies did in poor bleeding France shocks the conscience. It's hard to read and comprehend and actually give credence to. Imagine France, and we'll use the geographic France that we understand, but we'll say that we also know that there were petty kingdoms and divisions and what have you. But imagine an area that large that just had roaming gangs of highly armed brigands roaming about and freely murdering, maiming, and raping, stealing in a way that that we really are ill-equipped to understand. It was stunningly awful. Crops couldn't be gotten in from the field. Towns couldn't, villages couldn't exist in the fashion that they had grown up in during the Middle Ages. Gonzalez writes, Orban thrums his nose at European Union pieties with gusto. Really? Pieties with gusto? Is that kind of like pasta with pesto? Which is why he can be forgiven if he uses provocative terms to attract attention to an important project. He continues, if you believe that all men are created equal or endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and that governments are instituted to secure these rights and the blessings of liberty, then the type of state that Orban wants to build is likely not your bag. He says he believes that Hungarians are exceptional innately, not as a result of national traits that are acquirable. We are a unique species, he said last week. There is a world which we alone see. Ha. Now, Mike Gonzalez over at the Heritage Foundation says that this qualifies Viktor Orban as a maverick. I didn't know maverick was spelled N-A-Z-I. Because there's nothing new or edgy about arguing that that Hungarians are a unique species. How do you even make that argument with a straight face? How do you even make that argument without clicking your heels and snapping up a stiff arm salute with your right arm? But there's the Heritage Foundation. Allegedly a group that supports American exceptionalism, but in fact is little more than a well-moneyed front group for fascism. Because what it boils down to is Viktor Orban is a fascist. And he would, in a heartbeat, open the doors to that abattoir in the name of his fascism without the word fascism. In case you're wondering, by at least one metric, Hungary is the least democratic country in the European Union. Viktor Orban has, among other things, downplayed Hungarian collaboration in the Holocaust. Not far different from the statute passed in Poland in the fairly recent past. In providing words in praise of the Hungarian memorial to the victims of the German occupation, Viktor Orban said, "Victims of the Nazi occupation in Hungary, whether Orthodox Christian or without faith, became the victims of a dictatorship that embodied an anti-Christian school of thought." This is, of course, a complete fucking lie, because the Nazi regime was a Christian regime. Got mit uns on the belt plates and all that. All kinds of Christian iconography. Teutonic knights in shiny, shining armor carrying swastika flags. Just like the Christian crusader knights of old. Did you catch that line? Victims of the Nazi occupation, whether Orthodox Christian or without faith. Where'd the Jews go? Oops. And just in case you're wondering, not too long past, Steve Bannon packed up his shabby clothing and no razor and zoomed off to Budapest, where he delivered a speech in which he called Viktor Orban Trump before Trump. And said that upon Viktor Orban's shoulders rest the effort to ensure the, quote, survival of the Judeo-Christian West. Mostly Christian, not a lot of Judeo. And just as an aside, I wish the Judeos would stand up and boldly tell people like Steve Bannon and the White Wing and the Evangelicals to quit using Judeo next to Christian, because they ain't the same thing. And you don't get to co-opt Judeo into Christian just because you think it sounds good. There is no Judeo-Christian West, because the Judeo part of Judeo-Christian quite often found itself the victim of pogroms and slaughters being driven out of countries. Yeah, that's some alliance, that Judeo-Christian cultural alliance. But it's good from time to time to look out beyond the territorial confines of the United States, where our own version of fascism is on the march, and note that it's marching in other places as well. Hello, Brexit! Hello, rise of the German Nazi Party! Hey, how's it going there in the Norwegian prison, Anders Breivik?
Hello, Marine Le Pen, who just had to rebrand her political party because people were beginning to hip to what a goddamn Nazi she is. And Richard Grenell. Is central to the whole effort. And when Richard Grenell, ambassador to Germany, says he wants to empower conservative movements in Europe, Viktor Orban is exactly who he's talking about, as well as the ultra-right-wing movements in places like Poland. We suspect things like that, but we really don't see it on the march. We have a hard time recognizing it on the march. The way we do when we see it in other countries that have been victimized by fascism in the past. I thought about our buddy Scott in Sweden, the other day, a couple of weeks back, when I read a story coming out of Sweden. For the first time in more than 30 years, the Swedish government has issued a pamphlet for 4.8 million households in the country. The title of the pamphlet, and I'm going to make a complete train wreck of this, is Om krisen eller kriget komma. Om krisen eller kriget komma means if crisis or war comes. And it's a pamphlet from the Swedish government to the Swedish citizenry of what to do and how to behave and what to expect if their everyday lives happen to be turned upside down by warfare. In the pamphlet, you can find things like how to spot propaganda, how to spot what we refer to here as fake news. How to deal with the harshness of Swedish winters in case of an interruption in basic services. What to do in the event of terror attacks. What to do in the case of a military invasion. Well, who in the hell up there would invade Sweden? Those inscrutable Norwegians and Danes and Finns. No, not hardly. Hey, look, it's Mother Russia. The last time this pamphlet was issued was in the 1980s at the height of the Cold War. Since then, it hasn't been particularly deemed relevant or necessary. But now, in 2018, it is. MSB General Director Dan Eliasson made a statement, "We all have a responsibility for our country's safety and preparedness, so it's important for everyone to also have knowledge on how we can contribute if something serious occurs. Sweden is safer than many other countries, but threats exist." The pamphlet contains the following: if Sweden is attacked by another country, we will never give up. All information to the effect that resistance is to cease is false. Sweden is famously neutral. They were neutral in the First and Second World Wars.
and they also have a fairly well-trained military that will happily hand your ass to you if you fuck with them. They're kind of like that other country that starts with SW, Switzerland. But they also understand the tenuous times in which we live. And they also understand the burgeoning run on the Arctic itself. Sweden has reintroduced conscription. They've posted troops on the island of Gotland in the Arctic North. They've boosted the defense spending by $720 million over 5 years. Yes, that's a drop in the bucket compared to the Pentagon. But they're looking to swell their military ranks. And yeah, as far back as May 2017, a little over a year ago, the Swedish defense minister, a guy by the name of Peter Hultqvist, told CNN the Russian regime has showed they are ready to use military powers to fulfill political goals. So much for Russia ain't done nothing. Russia's innocent. They're just sweet little lammies. Vladimir Pooty Poot is so cuddly. I love it when he takes his shirt off. You think Jill Stein has a poster of shirtless Vladimir Putin on her ceiling? Because I do. And the Swedes, by God, don't get all... they don't get their maiden forms all in a bunch over... They've got a liberal definition of being Swedish. Because the pamphlets aforementioned are being printed up in 13 different languages. And they were distributed last week during Emergency Preparedness Week in Sweden, because they have one of those, socialists. Reckon we'd print up such a pamphlet in 13 languages? Shit. Republican Party'd have a baby. Probably name it Adolf. At the prospect of printing it up in anything but God's own English. Yeah, well played, Ron and Raleigh. Did he mean stirring the pot of gulag? Oh, that's good, Ron. That's good. Meanwhile, Jim notes, better known as condottiere on the loose, both ideological and pathological. No? Yes. Mm-hmm. Like I said, once in a while it's worth looking outside our territorial borders just to see what's on the threat board. Let's run over and check in with Todd down in the South Carolina stand. Hey, Todd. Todd.
I'm feeling sheepish.
Well, I understand.
No, man, but it's just a couple of things here. You got me, man. This is very sad. We knew what was happening, but God almighty. It's painful to hear, just to be explained like that. It's really painful.
Well, I mean, it this shit is growing. And one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite movie lines, this is not a boating accident.
Well.
And we're going to need a bigger boat with less fascists in it.
You know, and it got me thinking, I try to think sometimes, But, it, you know, we weren't that scared of fascism as a country, you know, at the beginning of the Second World War. We had to be dragged into it.
Well, we were not only not that scared of fascism, we had people in this country who were actively in favor of it. Charles Lindbergh comes to mind. Henry Ford.
Bush.
The Bush family eagerly collaborated. IBM. And mm-hmm. on and on. Hell, was DuPont involved? Something. I've got a brain cell that says DuPont on it back there. That yeah.
Probably. Had to. Yeah. But, and see, this all goes back to this lack of education again with these folks, man. It's really something to be that loud and ignorant at the same time, you know. So I was, man, that yesterday with Punky, that really got to me. I was in the middle of an email right when you made that announcement. And, it's not the same, but it's something like when Bill went away, you know. Bill Miller?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We take our friends and our members of this community to our hearts.
Mm-hmm. That's really something. So, I don't know if you saw this. I just saw it a few minutes ago. When I don't know what to call them right now. The mentally ill fascist, whatever, I don't know, just the weirdo. At that ceremony, you know, with the military, Harry Elder showing it again. Oh, my God, I'm telling you, his craziness, man, it's unleashed. This dude is fucking crazy. Sorry.
No, please, don't hold back.
With his hand over his heart, he's kind of, oh, my God, it's disgusting. He looks like he's a fucking crazy bat.
You know what, more than anything else, and I don't mean this as an insult, you sound like somebody who's watching the Hindenburg approach the mast at Lakehurst, New Jersey.
Oh, they're united.
Oh, my God. What? Oh, no. Oh, the humanity, yeah.
It just popped. I just glanced over, and I had the tablet on, and I just figured out where I could watch some different things on this thing. But, yeah, it was frightening. I mean, we all know he's crazy, but he doesn't give his freak flag is flying, man. He's out there. He is out there. Oh, my God. When everybody sees it.
The best part of it all, and people will have to go, Todd, and watch video. Don't leave the program, please. But there's video out there. You remember when Nectarine Nero couldn't quite remember the words of the national anthem? What was it at the college football national championship?
He was bumbling,
and he was just kind of Rockets. What am I going to wear? Something. I breathe the best air. Well, they decide to play God Bless America at his special ceremony in honor of himself. And there's video of him not knowing the words to God Bless America.
That is so simple. How do you not know that?
And then there was the guy in the crowd when they did the national anthem, took a knee. White guy. Big white guy with a beard.
Holy cow.
I hope he's still alive.
That's crazy. Well, they're going to be showing this tape more and more. Because, I mean, I had the volume off. And I'm telling you, you can see a lot with the volume off. You know, just look at the body language. Oh, my God. I mean, it must have just come out because when they showed it again, I said I was looking at the Hindenburg or something. I'm telling you, it's frightening. This is the damn president. Man, you know what? Our do nothing congressman, they're gonna have to get on the stick now. This is ridiculous. We can't. I mean, Now, but this is what I'm worried about, and this is another reason I called, is that I'm not seeing that we have anyone, because this is not about who's qualified anymore. This is all about personality. I'm not seeing that we have anyone with enough personality to beat him if he runs again. If he can, you know, if he's not in prison or in the asylum or, you know, just home.
Well, but he's not going to be in prison, and he's not going to be in the asylum, Todd. And he'll be standing right there in front of the Marine Band 24/7, 365, because that's what he can do. This thing was concocted for him to give him something to do, because he's not very good at being president. But this video of him, wait a minute, let me hang on. He's sitting there bobbing his fucking head like it's rock and roll high school. And the only word he recognized was prairie, and then he nodded his head some more. Probably the way that Punky nodded his head. When he, yeah, because I saw the Punky video. It's like that.
Up and down, thinking all. Oh God, I mean, not.
But you know, I get what you say about, you know, having someone with the personality to challenge him. But holy hell, what an indictment that is of us! That it's not about your brains. It's not about your understanding of public policy. It's about having the personality to oppose a guy who got his start in TV in wrestling. Maybe that means that Jesse Ventura is the guy to run against him.
Well, or The Rock, or that's
yeah, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Why not?
I mean, it really does. This is what his folks said. They were like, well, he'll get the right people around him. And like you said, Betsy DeVos. Now, you know what I've had to say about her.
Yes.
You know, my God. I knew that was a fire. Just with her brother. It's just so much. Yeah, so, okay, so back to our side. You know, and I'm not seeing it. And you know me, man. I'm got my pulse, man. I mean, I feel the pulse, man. Washington Journal, man. You hear it. These are the folks that vote, and these are the folks where it's easy for them to vote.
Why can't them football players just kneel and love the troops like we do?
Yeah, that. Oh, and by the way, of course, you know what? The Eagles were ahead of the curve because what they did last season, they just stayed in the locker room. The whole team stayed in the locker room. They got ahead of it.
Well, I mean, I've seen photos of them standing on the sidelines with their hands over their hearts.
Yeah, but it got to a point where they stayed in the locker room when the heat got on.
I got to ask you a question, Todd. Do you, because they didn't, because they were disinvited, you know, nine of them, and didn't show up, do you feel, and I ask this for a reason, as an Eagles fan, because I know you are one, do you feel abandoned?
Abandoned? I feel relieved.
Just answer the question, sir. Do you feel like by not showing up at the White House that you were abandoned by the Philadelphia Eagles? I'll explain why I ask in a moment.
No. What? The Eagles did what they were supposed to do. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. They don't want to have anything to do with that weirdo. Because we are a team. You look at our team, man. We got rid of Riley Cooper because he was a redneck jackass. Sorry about that.
Well,
you know,
I asked.
He was calling people nigger. He was calling people fucking nigger in practice. They got rid of his ass.
Well, I ask you this because Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags said the vast majority of the Eagles team decided to abandon their fans. Uh-oh, I did it again.
What happened? You faded out for a minute.
Oh, no, the vast majority of the Eagles team decided to abandon their fans, and then there was this broad, like, you know, Ted Cruz 17 seconds of silence there from you. I thought I'd maybe rendered you speechless again. I hate it when I do that.
No, I was listening intently because, you know, come on. No, I heard that one, a part of it. You know, I've almost gotten to the point. I used to like really looking forward to her press conferences, but it's what's the, you know, what's the point? And you saw her break down in tears when someone a little child asked her about gun control, right?
Oh, yeah. That was precious.
Yeah.
Did they ever find the cutaway where she turns around and puts the Visine in her eyes?
I don't know.
Because I don't think that woman gives a good goddamn about any child anywhere in America. What she cares about is what is what the rest of the Republicans care about, the precious, delicate fee-fees of the gun industry. But, hey, let's give props to LeBron. Yeah, what did he say? It doesn't matter who wins these finals. Ain't neither one of them going to the White House. And Steph Curry went, yep, I'm with LeBron.
Yeah, we can get that out of the way right now. So, you know, don't lose any sleep. When, you know, just move on. Are you kidding? This guy, and it's so ironic. Why is he using the military as a prop? He has no damn. He is more shameless than Frank ever was. You know, shameless. I don't understand it. But you see, we're in trouble. These people will follow him to their grave, our grave, everybody's grave. And
Well, if they just follow him to their grave, that would be cool. And then maybe we could work on fixing the country. Boy, that was cold, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. Listen, we have to be truthful now. And I'm glad you said that. This is something that's been burning me up. With this and the Comey thing, I haven't really brought that up with you ever, the Comey thing, but making this country better. Now, this is what's burning me up, right? Right before the last administration came to an end, we could borrow money as a country for almost less than 0%. Actually, it was, because that was around the LIBOR scandal, around that same time frame. So, you know, they couldn't give money away. But that Congress that wanted to block that guy so bad, Obama so bad, we could have gotten things started. Look, if you have to buy a car and somebody's going to offer you 0% or less than 0% interest, or you'll say, no, my car is not running that well, I think I'll just wait and just break down on the side of the road and then have to really buy a car on the road because I'm broken down at 14%. You know, choice A, choice B. So they have squandered a wonderful opportunity. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it now because the interest rates are up. And we got this overheated economy that's based on bullshit. So, you know, we should have gotten started with that now. And they're bickering over Amtrak, which is that shit should have started 20 years ago. I mean, the country would not run properly without the Northeast Corridor rail system. You know, there's no way around it, you know, because everybody uses it. SEFTA uses it. Long Island Railroad uses it. You know, all the Connecticut trains use it. Maryland trains use it. You know, I'm talking about the commuter rails, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we got to have that. And one other thing.
Well, there's a whole bunch of – yeah, go ahead. No, ahead.
Just real quick. The 12 tribes of Israel. I remember you talking about them the other day. We were talking to somebody about them at the subway stop, at the metro stop in D.C.
Oh, that was me and Hung Like Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're all over, man. They're organ. They know where to go. But it's fun because when you're waiting on the bus or the subway, it's very entertaining.
The Hoteps.
The Hoteps.
Yeah. I think that's the word that Angry used to use to describe them. The Hoteps.
Kill Whitey and all that kind of stuff.
Hoteps, yeah.
The Hoteps. Well, yeah, there's all kinds of these little groups, and so that's all I wanted. Unless people have been to the city, they've never seen that. This is a freak show. It's funny. Oh, but the Comey thing. I had to wait till the dust settled. But this is what I do not understand. How can one person have the latitude to decide when to release information like that? That would be that explosive.
How?
Does that make sense to you?
Well, yeah, but that's a question of the human heart that's hard to answer with the human intellect. You know what I mean?
I just waited and waited. I've never really gotten a good answer.
At least we now know, thanks to Rudy Giuliani. At least we now know that Donald Trump is pacing back and forth in the White House, mumbling about how desperately he wants to murder James Comey.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Well, no, I mean, that's what came out over the weekend, that when Giuliani said, absolutely, if the president wanted to kill him, he could.
Well, I heard
and
that.
He couldn't be indicted for it. Well, that's a little too specific. I mean, even when we've talked about it, I've spoken in general terms of, him putting on the clown suit and getting the rifle and going up to the top of the White House and just starting picking people off. But the fact that, James Comey, when you're working with specifics, those things don't just pop up.
I could shoot him. I'd shoot him in the middle of Fifth Avenue if I could. Hey, if I did, they couldn't indict me, could they?
Oh, no, sir, Mr. President.
Oh, God. You know what? You're right. That's a little weird. Yup. Oh, my God. But what the hell? Oh, my God. This whole thing, I cannot believe. I mean, something's going to happen. We're all, maybe we're all going to die in a minute. This is just too, this shit can't get any worse. How can it get any worse?
Don't ask. It can.
But wait a minute. But, Julie, I don't understand. There's a couple of things here that do not make fucking sense to me. Number one, if I was Mueller, I would think that Jeff Sessions has already spilled his guts because he's got the job he always wanted, and he knows he can stay there and the president will go somewhere. So I think he's already spilled his guts. That's why he asked. Am I under investigation?
Well, I think that's a possibility. But also bear in mind that there are reports now that the White House has pretty much given up trying to find someone to fill the slot underneath Rod Rosenstein. Because nobody will take it.
Oh, that's huge. Oh, shit. Oh, no, that's huge. Whew. You know who's going to be at McDonald's tonight? Binge eating. Oh, my God.
No, he won't be. No, he'll send John Kelly out. That's what happens. He sends John Kelly out for his Mickey D's fixes.
Oh, my God.
All huge. Those people at the McDonald's down there close to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah, that bald guy's in for another big bag of Big Macs. I don't know where he puts them, man. He seems pretty trim. He sure does pound them away. Yeah, no, I mean, the story was in the Wall Street Journal, which is not exactly a liberal rag. They have said that the Trump regime has pretty much given up looking for somebody to fill the number three slot at Justice. Because nobody, they've offered it. I got to do my hair that year. Ah, my dog ate my law license. Wait, is that my mother? I hear my mother calling me. Oh, sorry. That was my mom.
Yeah. Right. Nobody wants to be involved with this. But the sad truth, you know what, though? Honest to God, it seems like at the end of the day, though, it's not just this crazy person. It's all these weirdo people that, it's just, I had no idea this country was this, we're really bad off.
Well, and we sit there and we go, ha, 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 nobody wants to take the job, Todd. But the fact of the matter is there are at least five high-profile units inside the Department of Justice that do not have a political appointee at the top. And among those are criminal, civil, and the tax division of the DOJ. So what you've actually got is, on the one hand, nobody wants the job because everybody knows that it ain't nothing but trouble to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
But secondarily, it works out the way they want it too, because they're deconstructing the administrative state. And hey, look, there's no political head at the tax division or the criminal division or the civil division. So who's going to give the marching orders to indict his ass or to investigate his ass or give the give the okay to pass along evidence, say, of, you know, him being a giant tax fraud?
See, that's, you're exactly right. That's another huge problem. It's a huge problem. We got no apparatus to do anything. But however, we got plenty of judges to you know, pass judgment on folks.
And we've always got Scott Pruitt, who will always be out there to accept a pair of courtside seats at a University of Kentucky game from a season ticket holder who's a friend of Cole, or a Cole Baron, actually. Because that's something that happened.
These people make Teapot look like a tea vat, you know.
Oh, no. Scott Pruitt is determined to be more corrupt than the entire Grant administration.
He won't stop. He is fucking feckless, shameless. He does not give a damn. And my former representative, remember maybe 2 months ago, a month and a half, he said, well, if you didn't give any money to us, don't even talk to me. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
That's pure illegal. I don't know what is going on.
Meanwhile, you remember a couple of weeks back, the sleazy comment made about John McCain? Well, we don't have to worry about him. He'll be dead soon. Well, the woman who said that has sort of, she's gone all Melania. In other words, she's disappeared. She doesn't work at the White House anymore. Just, you know, went out for a walk, didn't come back. You know, just.
I don't know what's going on.
Just went all, you know, she just went all. She just went all Bruce Springsteen. I went out for a drive and I never came back. Problem solved.
So you mean she disappeared?
No, I mean she left the left her in White House employment. And according to CNN, she's just not there anymore. Yamiche Alcindor said, a White House source just confirmed to me that Kelly Sadler, the White House aide who joked about Senator John McCain's health last month, no longer works in the Trump administration. The source wouldn't say why Sadler was let go and said she might go to another administration job, you know, later on.
Mm-hmm.
After she gets back from that farm they sent to her in upstate New York, where she can run and play to her heart's content.
Mm-hmm. She's off to be re-educated. Oh, my God. Well, I don't, you know, this whole, I'm a little bit sick of seeing this guy, the president, using these bands in the military. It's really disgusting.
Well, yeah, and it was disgusting when George W. Bush did it, too. And I only say that, Todd, to point out the broader continuum of using the military as some sort of stage props. Remember when George W. went running with the guy that didn't have any legs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that. But then there's the... But wait. Because, you know, you and I, we sort of pick apart these little... these interesting little moments. What do you think of the business about Mueller's team asking for Paul Manafort to be sent to cool his heels in the stir, since he can't seem to abide by the law while living on home confinement? Any thoughts there? Because I got some.
Guess what? There's two reasons for that. Number one, he can't be trusted. Number two, they want to keep him alive. That's what I think.
Okay, I'll add those to my list, but here's my thinking. We all know that the cantaloupe Caligula is really feeling his oats with his pardon power. And
right.
We also know from the Nixon years that abuse of the pardon power can form an element of an impeachment. Okay?
True.
So it turns out Paul Manafort, in really not at all particularly intelligent fashion, was engaging in some cheap-ass witness tampering, according to the
right.
allegations.
Right.
Dude is already looking, if convicted, and you know he's been very strong. No, I will not plead guilty. I will not cooperate. I'm going to try this. I'm going to prove my innocence. Yeah, meanwhile, Clementine Claudius issues a tweet a couple of days ago saying, why didn't they tell me he was under investigation? I mean, he's only been under investigation 10 years. Why didn't they tell me? Damn it.
That's silly. That is so stupid.
He admitted Manafort's guilt for him. So hold up. Hold up.
Damn.
So he gets caught witness tampering. And these deadly serious, very unfunny, wouldn't laugh at a pratfall prosecutors go to the court and say, look, we got to lock him up. He can't be law-abiding within the terms of his home confinement, and here's the evidence. So please lock him up. Well, if in fact abuse of the pardon process can be an element of impeachment, because it can constitute an intent to obstruct justice.
That's what I was exactly right.
Then if you stick Manafort in jail pending trial, if you revoke his bond and you make him sit in pretrial, not Gen Pop, mind you, but pretrial, then Donald Trump has to sit there knowing that Manafort is sitting in prison. And every minute that Manafort sits in prison is another minute that Manafort thinks that, well, he's letting me sit here. He could pardon me, but he hadn't pardoned me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still sitting here on the Group W bench. Hey, you dirty screw. You got a quarter? I want to use the payphone. Mm-hmm. I want to call Mueller.
Turnkey.
And the tin cup clanging across the bars. And then
yep.
Trump
and
gets
then
and then
like,
Trump
you know what?
And
I
then,
don't want to be here anymore.
And then Trump gets wind of it. Well, I'm going to have to pardon him. Sir.
That's crap, isn't it?
Sir, if you pardon
that's
him.
Crap.
You're probably obstructing justice, sir.
Yep.
Well, how could I be obstructing justice? I'm Donald Trump. I can't obstruct justice. I'm the president. You told me that.
Well, sir, we were just trying to make you feel a little better, sir. You were having a bad day.
Bob, you figured it. But, okay.
And so he pardons him, and then Mueller goes, boop. Because he becomes self-indicting.
Wow. Oh, that's the cherry on the top. Good. I mean, because even to a layman, now we already see there is a clear, premeditated, chronic, and ongoing pattern of obstruction of justice. We're not talking about one instance. We're talking about a coordinated pattern, an intent. he's already given up the hardest part to prove. The president has already given up the hardest part to prove his intent, his mental state. Mm-hmm. He already did that. That's mm-hmm. done. Okay, and that's the hardest part to prove. So, and we already see a pattern.
But not just that. Not just that, Todd. Consider for a moment. You know, the only thing that says you can't indict a sitting president is this bullshit post-Watergate opinion in the DOJ, the guidance, the administrative rule or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the statute. It's not in the Code of Federal Rules. It's not in it's not in the Constitution. It's just something that somebody thought up in Gerald Ford's Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Robert Mueller and you're contemplating the necessity of an indictment, and he knows damn good and well that it's an absurd notion that you can't indict the president for anything. If you're going to indict him, you're only going to do so in a case that is so clear-cut that even the idiots on the right-wing side of the Supreme Court, you know, Ann's boy Neal and Sammy Bad Breath and Slappy Coke Can Thomas and Clarence Deadeye Roberts, you're only going to indict on a case where your fact pattern is so clear-cut that even those fascist pricks can't deny the situation. So you're going to let Donald Trump do something that is self-incriminating.
Hang himself.
And you're just yeah, right. And that's what this is. This is just a couple more coils of rope, you know, fed out. You know, this is the fisherman who's got the badass marlin online. Is just meow.
Bob, that's brilliant, Bob. Now you know what, and maybe, and this is a little on the conspiracy side, but maybe Mueller was coached in this direction.
Coached?
By the DOJ. Say, well, this is what we want you to do. This way, you're not out saying anything yet. I don't know. Maybe it's out there. But
Rosenstein is the one who's overseeing it. So the Rosenstein is where the buck stops. Sessions isn't allowed to know shit. He's got the cone of silence over him. And so, you know, Mueller goes to Rosenstein and says, look, I don't have any choice. It is absurd that a man would commit so many egregious acts and we'd say that, well, we're just going to look the other way because he's the president. I mean, I don't want to do this. Nobody wants to do this. But
right.
if we don't do this, the entire rule of law in the entire United States of America falls the fuck apart. The whole thing is exposed as little more than a mechanism for shitting on poor people, which is mostly what the law is. You know, I formulated my theory years ago of the three M's of the law. Manage the morons, protect the money above all, and occasionally punish the ones that are just plain mean. Morons, money, and mean. And
everything else just falls where it is, huh?
Yeah. Every legal case in the criminal law can be fit into one of those three categories.
Oh, okay. Let me ask you something that's been burning me up. Okay. Wells Fargo. If we had done what Wells Fargo did, we would be in prison for felony identity theft, all types of fraud. Yet on the heels of that, banking regulations are being relaxed.
Yeah.
Now,
That's what you mean, right? That's what you mean. If you have money, if you're big enough, you can basically do whatever you want.
Right, because we're going to protect the money.
Right, because the business of America is business.
Right.
And remember, because remember, if you didn't own any property or any land or anything, even if you were a white man, you weren't shit anyway. So that's who we are, really. That's what green is about. It's all about, you know, capitalism's a good thing, but unbridled capitalism, you know, I didn't make that phrase up, but I understand it. That makes sense. That's why another reason I get irritated. I hate to be all negative all the time, but it's just irritating, man. It's just fucking irritating to have all these loud, ignorant people acting like they want to run shit. They need to shut the fuck up and sit down. Otherwise, I mean, why the fuck bother going to school? Why just make shit up? Just say, that's not water, that's gasoline. Well, how do you know? I don't know. It's wet and it's cold. Who knows? Well, do you have an instrument to figure out if it's gasoline or water? No, that would take school. We don't go to school. Fuck that.
We'll just go with what we believe.
This shit is not funny anymore. It's not cute. And they need to shut the fuck up. And if I sound coarse, I'm sorry. But, look, man, everybody has a lot in life. Everybody's not fucking smart. Some people are smart in certain ways. You know, it's not my fault. It's the way shit is. You know, I go back to my orthopedic surgeon versus the butcher. You know, you don't like education and science, go to the fucking butcher for your hip replacement. It's all fucking, you know, joints and tendons and shit. You're going to saw. It's going to be a saw. Either way, it's going to be a saw. So you call the medical device manufacturer, and he'll drop that shit off at the butcher shop. And I got a guy that'll give you some fentanyl to put you to sleep. And, you know, you'll save about $5,000.
There we go.
I'm sorry. It's just really sad. I don't know, man.
Let me throw another wrinkle in there, courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, Robert Mueller. He and his team still have to get past Judge T.S. Ellis, a Reagan appointee, who seems to want to tank Mueller's case against Manafort in the Virginia court. Meanwhile, however, the judge in the Washington, D.C. court is ruling against Manafort and in favor of Mueller, left and right, on the same motions. So what that would constitute is a split in the circuits. The Virginia case would go up to the Fourth Circuit, which is not nearly as right-wing as it used to be. It's one of the more it's one of the saner circuits now. The D.C. stuff goes up to the D.C. circuit, and then there's a split in the circuits, and it goes up to the Supremes. But on the other hand, the question of my little hypothetical applies to Manafort. We would be talking about jurisdiction in D.C., so theoretically the indictment would be presented to the D.C. grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at least I think it would. Oh, I gotta share a funny with you. Remember the other day when the North Koreans brought Donnie Dimwit that... great big envelope that they got around the corner at the Hallmark store, the big joke birthday card thing. You saw the picture,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I got to give credit where credit's due, and in this case, credit goes to Matthew Raza at Salon, who figured it out. Why that big-ass envelope?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes perfect sense.
Does it have to do with Trump's hands?
Yes. He is standing there like the dotard Kim Jong-un said he is. And he's just got a part of his hands holding the corners of the envelope. And that big-ass envelope makes his hands look tinier than they even are.
Oh.
And so probably all over the, you know, the in crowd in North Korea is sitting there with their hands over their mouths going, oh, my God, he fell for it. Whoop. You know, it's almost as good as if they'd brought him a flaming bag of dog shit and left it on the porch of the White House.
Oh, he got served. Trump got served.
Oh, he got played. 40 love.
I didn't think about it until you presented the scenario to me.
Well, when you see the photograph, it becomes abundantly clear. Because the perspective, and he makes it worse because he's hunched over like Montgomery Burns. And he's grinning like a schoolboy who just pooed himself. Jesus.
I don't know what's going to become of us. I mean, really, I'm telling you.
I'm so old that I remember when Wingnuts had a hissy over Barack Obama nodding his head to the ceremonial head of state of Japan.
Oh. They didn't let that go, did they?
No. And that was even after watching George W. Bush kiss his royal, serene, majestic, noble, high graciousness of Saudi Arabia right on the mouth eater. Well, you know, that's a cultural thing. That's something they do there in the desert. And they've known the Bushes for a long time. And you've got to know those little cultural things. And sometimes you just got to kiss a Saudi prince right on the kisser. He bowed to the Emperor of Japan. God damn, the flag is falling.
See? But that's why you can't have rabble in the White House. That, you know, because you have to respect people's cultural norms. You know, you got to have people on your team, you know, that will do the research and say, well, these are the protocols in this country. You know, because honestly, Americans, we're coarse. We're new. We're only, you know, we're not that old. We're a little bit of everything. We don't have the same types of, I mean, it makes us strong, but it makes us very different than a lot of other cultures around the world. And they take that shit seriously, man. I mean, like, if you go to somebody's house and you don't eat the food, man, don't go to sleep. They might fucking kill you. You don't know.
I want to slurp noodle. I want to slurp noodles in Japan because noodle slurping is expected. That's what I want. Because we do this. I watched a video the other night on YouTube. I don't know why. I go down the rabbit hole, Todd. It happens. But the guy's name is Tatsuro Rai. Tatsuro Rai, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He runs a 12-seat noodle joint in Hokkaido.
12 feet?
12 seats.
Oh, that's like theater then.
And every noodle served is made by his hand.
Oh, wow.
And his wife works with him and does the service. And he's apparently an acknowledged master of soba the world over. So I watched this video of him, and it was like watching Bobby Jones putt, okay? All he asked for was complete silence while he made the noodle. And you know what?
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, I'm serious. And you know what? I watched it with Agnes. And so they say that bit about the silence. Do you know that Agnes and I sat there and did not make so much as a peep? I mean, we're just watching YouTube, and we could look at each other and go, God damn, that's really cool, isn't it? Hey, look at this. Watch this. Hey, let's get... No, we sat there silent, too.
Because it demanded your focus just like that, didn't it?
Yeah, owned it.
That's some shit. That's special in. That means, that's crazy. Wow. That's
you got, no, well, you got to go look. It's just amazing. Tatsuro Rai.
Wait a minute. I'm going to write that down. What's his name again?
Tatsuro Rai.
Okay. Oh, Ray.
Rye. Rye.
Rye. Oh, okay.
My Japanese pronunciation is for shit, but it's, yeah.
I don't know anything about it. Wow, okay. Because, you know, I have Nuri in here. I like to make my miso soup. You know, I'm trying.
Oh, no, you will not be okay. You're going to get done watching this and going, I got to have some buckwheat flour. I got to at least try this. I mean, dude's got 3 or 4 different diameters of what look like big dowel rods that are his rolling pins.
Wow.
And he starts out with this little wad of sort of gray colored, because you know buckwheat's got a sort of grayish color to it. This little ball of gray colored dough, and starts to work it. And the next thing, it's a sheet, and pretty soon you realize that he's folding this dough the same way a goddamn metalsmith folded the steel in a Japanese katana. And it's all, you know, and he moves around, you know, when he's done, you know how when you're making bread and stuff, you scatter a little bit of flour to keep it from sticking to you and stuff. Well, he does the same thing, but he completely and perfectly manages all the flour. Better than the most.
That's impossible. No, that's impossible.
Better than the most hardcore cokehead sitting there making the perfect line and making sure there's no flakes getting away.
He has the perfect credit card for that.
He's got the perfect tool for it. Yes. And it's not a great big space. And then he's got 2 great big cauldrons: one of simmering water, and another one of cold water. And these beautiful baskets, you know, none of this metal strainer bullshit. No pouring the water out. You take the pasta out of the water.
Okay. With bamboo baskets?
Oh, sure.
Oh, God, this is making me hungry.
And it's just simple. It's cold soba with, you know, these dipping sauces. And you don't slop the sauce all over it. You put the soba in the sauce, and then you slop, and then you slurp the soba. And I mean, I've had it. It's delicious. And it's just simple as can be.
Wow!
But it was a manifest. Well, it was a manifestation of absolute mastery of an art / craft form.
That sounds wonderful. It really does.
When he gets down to the business of, you know, ain't no machines here. He's the machine. And when he gets down to the business where he's actually cutting the noodles, you're just sitting there and you're stone silent and your palms are on the side of your face like Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, and you're just dumbstruck.
And you know what you're about to eat is gonna be delicious.
And the guy's got a 12-seat restaurant and turns people away. And somehow manages to make a living.
Did they serve sake?
Oh, I imagine you can probably get some sake there. Although I don't know what the protocol is. Maybe you don't eat. Maybe you don't drink sake with cold soba. Tim San out from L.A. would probably be able to answer that question. He eats soba. He just won't eat sushi.
You got to be careful with the sushi. I mean it. I heard you talking about Publix and sushi, and they have that here also. But you really got to be careful because the way I was taught, all fish has worms. That's why you have to eat fish fresh. It's just a matter of the older that fish gets, the bigger the worms get.
I've seen one emerge from a swordfish steak, and that's why I don't eat swordfish.
Yeah, see, that's why, man. Yeah, you gotta be careful. I tell you what I don't like though.
I'm a big fan of tuna, sushi, sashimi.
Sure.
And I don't like it when I get like a spicy tuna roll, and it's that minced tuna hash.
That's not what you're paying for, Bob.
That's cheating.
You want the steak. If we were going to do that, stay home and eat a can of tuna. No, no. tuna steak that's firm.
What are we? What are we? Twin sons from different mothers. What's going on here, Todd? I mean, there's too much.
I'm just saying. Listen, I don't know if I told you, but you see, I spent a whole summer, and it changed my life. I had to make money during the summer to go, you know, go back to school for books and, you know, other things. And I worked at a very nice French restaurant in Chestnut Hill in Philadelphia. And they wanted me to stay on. I was the third person in charge. There's a chef, a sous chef, and then me. And,
whoa,
you know, they don't throw anything at it. You know, I learned a lot, man. Like, I had to do employee meals, and I had to get the stock pot going first thing, you know, and – man, that's a lot when you got to get that. You know how long it takes to get that stock pot to a rolling boil? It's shit, man. Come on. You can't be late. You know, I would have done that. I like cooking, you know, and all that. But, you know, I had to make a choice. But I like it as a hobby because it's the way I'm artistic. And, then, you know, the people like to come over. And, you know, when you create food, the kitchen's a nice I'm going off on a tangent. But anyway, that's where I learned about sushi because I was a fish person. Okay, I was a Mr. Poisson. And so we'd get this tuna in from, you know, from wherever in this big styrofoam box, and they showed me how to dress tuna. And that's when they were like, look, he's like, be careful when you eat sushi. I'll never forget this lesson. He's like, look, it's like this everywhere. They're like, you know, it's like anything else. It's a lot of it, but it's not all good. But when you open that crate and you dress it and you do it yourself, man, that is, oh, my God. I learned a lot in that restaurant. That's all I can say. You know, you learn the basics of cooking. I learned the basics of cooking. But I always liked to cook anyway. But that was a good experience. So that's where I learned about the worms. And yeah, so when you're in the market, you see, just because they're selling fish doesn't mean it's good fish. They don't want to lose any money. It's got to be firm. If you touch it with your finger and it's mushy, don't just stay away.
No.
That's one thing. When you go to a good restaurant, what they will do, there's two kinds of specials. A cheap restaurant, you don't want the daily special. That's the shit that's going bad. Stay away from it. But a good restaurant, like our restaurant, the first thing we would do after I put the stock pot on, we'd all walk out and we'd smoke a joint and walk around the corner to the farmer's market. And we would buy whatever was best. You know, and I'm learning from them. You know, chef, sous chef, me. You know, and so he was like, look, they were like, this is what you got to do. Like, you find out what's the best you can get, the freshest, because you cannot make a good meal without
it. It has to smell like the ocean, not like fish. The dead fish needs to have a clear eye.
All that, exactly. Then you move on to your herbs, spices, and vegetables, and that's what's going to be, that's the special for the day. You know, that's what's going to be on the menu, and then you have your other stuff you sell all the time. I learned how to make confit. You know, lemon confit, and I learned how to make demi-glace. You know, you take those veal bones and burn them off, and you make the demi-glace gravy.
We've just moved into the centerfold portion of the food porn with the demi-glace.
Yo, when you smell it, demi-glace, man, I was like, but the bones are burning. Like, nah, that's what you're supposed to do. And you know what? And this is why I'm a firm believer. I really like this upscale. It can't be the cheap stuff, but this upscale powdered bouillon. It can be either chicken or ham.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, like $10. $10 a jar. You spoon it out.
Yes. But you don't need a lot. And it's worth getting. I'm telling you. And see, when you steam your vegetables, because in a fresh restaurant, there's a spoonful of consomme and everything. You know, it adds. That's the flavor, you know. That's what makes. That's
I put consomme in my Bloody Marys.
Yeah, man, come on. Now I've never heard anybody say that. You're serious? Are you serious?
I'm deadly serious.
Oh man, we gotta hang out, man. Come on.
A couple of tablespoons of consomme in with the tomato juice and the celery salt and the. Yeah, of course
that's
I like.
That's a health thing.
Of course I like my Bloody Marys with the. With tequila instead of vodka, but you know, and I don't drink them anymore, so God damn it. But yeah,
well,
but hey, I got to tell you before we get out of here, you know, you and I are probably the food. I do food porn with others, but you know, you and I have raised it to an art. But sometimes I have to admit when I fail. And okay. I had an epic fail this weekend, Todd.
What happened?
With the acorn. Well,
what?
Yeah. I was talking offline with Brother Deacon Ace about it, and he was like, "You told me what you were going to do, man, and I didn't feel good about it, but I didn't want to say anything." You know, it's science. You got a hypothesis. You got to test the hypothesis. Real science doesn't go in, say, you know, working toward, you know, you don't take the result and work backwards. You find it. So I had some beautiful chicken cubes, chicken breast, and I bought some, some Speedy sauce, that magical New York marinade.
Mm-hmm.
Marinated it overnight. Mm-hmm. Had two bags, had a backup bag because I knew I was experimenting. Made a quart of tzatziki. Had my tomatoes and my onions already. No lettuce. I'm done with lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
But the theory was I was gonna create a really low, slow fire and use cherry chips for the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And just smolder them, not even let them catch fire. And so I skewered up my chicken cubes, and I put them on the rack up above the main grill, and I used the deflector so there wouldn't be any direct flame. And I let them gently smoke at not even 200 degrees for about a half an hour. And they were beautiful. They were beautiful. They had this gorgeous mahogany color.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't overdone. But then to finish them, I pulled the grill, pulled off the flame deflector, put the grill back on, ran the heat up, you know, 300, 400 degrees, and put them on and finished grilling them to get the pretty grill marks, and they turned into rocks.
Damn.
I mean, the neighbor dog would not eat them. The neighbor dog tried to eat them. The neighbor dog couldn't eat them.
The dog wouldn't eat them. Oh, my God.
No, not wouldn't, couldn't. Looked up at me like, dude, I'm gonna break a fang on these. So, having learned my lesson,
wait a minute, you didn't taste it? You didn't try one to see how?
Oh, I tried, but you could have tested this on the fucking Mohs hardness scale, okay?
Damn.
It would have been one down from fucking sapphire. I mean, you could have etched glass with these pieces of chicken, Todd.
Oh, that's terrible.
But I had my backup, so I skewered them up, ran the heat up, you know, and they were perfect. Popped a few cubes and then I heated up my pita bread on the pizza stone on the grill.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Popped that thing open, put the chicken cubes in. I'd grilled the onion, threw in the grilled onion, put in the tomato slices, slathered on the tzatziki, and I was a happy boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But failures do happen. And, you know, maybe I could have gotten away with it if it had been, like, 5 minutes in the smoke.
Well, you learned. I mean, I don't... You know, sometimes you don't know how hot the smoke is. Sometimes it's, you know, the cherry burns hot, I think, even though it's, you know what I mean? I think cherry burns.
No, but I mean, when I looked down, it never caught fire. It just carbonized. It just, you know, it didn't burn. It just smoldered. It did exactly what I wanted it to do.
So basically, you went too far with it. You should stop.
Yeah, my methodology, you know, from a science standpoint, my methodology was off.
Well, but see, all right, you know, I don't know, you didn't know this, but yeah, my mother, a few Christmases ago, she gave me this nice set of rosewood handle, like stainless steel kebabs. They're like a foot and a half long.
Ooh.
And they're very nice. I'm telling you, man, these are very, and they're double. It's two rods on each one so that you can really build this thing up. You know, peppers, I'm growing, you know, I grow peppers and all that. So They really work. They really work. And the kebab thing, man, it's really a nice thing to do when you got company, because it's quick. You know, once you prep up, you see,
yeah,
you can get that food out quick. Now last night, and I know you like this cut too, man. It's the beauty of a boneless, skinless chicken thigh. You got white meat, you got dark meat, you got all the flavors. It's everything. So I made teriyaki chicken last night with rice and what else did it? We had cheese toast. So that was good. I was gonna say the smoke. Sometimes it just cooks. I mean, when they're skewered, you see that metal is in between, so it's heated from the outside and inside.
Well, and the other thing is, because it had been in the marinade for 24 hours, I forgot to take into account the fact that, you know, just like with ceviche, acid cooks, acid in a marinade cooks the meat, too.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part. Right.
So it was somewhat cooked in the first place by virtue of the action of the acid. But I mean, I just want to be straight up about it. You know, there are failures, and you know, I'm not good at making things pretty, but damn it, most of the time it tastes good. But I've decided that I'm gonna, I'm gonna have to save money for, you know, for a slap. I'm gonna have to save nickels for a slap year to do this, but I want to do a tomahawk ribeye.
I don't know what that is.
Well, that's a ribeye with the rib bone still on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a bone-in ribeye.
That's tough. That's going to, well, not, I mean, you'll be able to do it, but that's got to really be low and slow.
Well, high and quick. I mean, I like it to come to the table still mooing.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. You get it to the right temperature.
Yeah.
My next thing, I know you got to go, I guess, but I want to try this spatchcock thing. I like to cut that chicken in half or whatever, cut it in half, and that's the new craze now, spatchcock.
I don't think I'm even, no.
Oh, yeah. Well, it cuts, like, in other words, it's saying that you can do this, get ready for Thanksgiving, because you just cut that turkey in half, it's spatchcock, if you cut the black backbone out.
And it just lays flat.
Laid flat. And then, like, I have a huge rosemary bush, man. I wish I could keep it quiet. Because I'm telling you, once you get that thing going, it took me a few years. I have two of them. But fresh sprigs of rosemary are just invaluable, you know, priceless. And so you put your seasoning in between the skin and the meat, obviously. And, you know, you know how we are with the rubs. And by the way, yeah, I remember the first time I grilled meat. And I was like, no, sauce would just interfere with this flavor. And that's like when you get, it's a whole other level. It's like Zen with the, you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Well, the other thing I've been thinking with regard to the acorn, you know, it's got those three ears there. That it down in the kettle. That's where the smoke deflector sits.
Mm-hmm.
I got to thinking, I'd like to find a good hand hammered, two-handled wok that is just the right diameter to sit down over those ears and just sit over those coals.
That would be the shit. Oh, my God. Just like in the Chinese restaurant, they had that big-ass...
Only not tasting like... Only not tasting of propane.
Oh, you had me cracking up talking about the... Okay. Please come to my mediocre restaurant.
One of these days I will take a picture, because I had a couple of questions. You know, Bob, you really don't have an okay Chinese buffet over there, do you? Yes, we do.
And it is okay.
I'll take a picture of it, I'll put it on Instagram, and the caption will say, the okay part is entirely aspirational.
Oh, I knew you were serious when you were saying it. Oh, God. When, next time you go to Myrtle Beach, though, you got to go to this place called Benjamin. Everybody can eat there. It has every effing thing, and everything is great. And you know how hard it is to cook, like, anything and have it all good? I mean, everything. Devil crabs. I can't even go on. Everything. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a huge buffet. Everything. Crab legs, blah, 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 this. And they have all this nice matter of fact, that's where I sent the picture from the pirate picture. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the next time you're in Myrtle Beach, man, it's a beautiful thing. You know, food is wonderful. I tell you, it's really...
Well, I mean, I marched through some fairly disturbing stuff this evening and didn't even scratch the surface. And you know, you call in and we talk about some disturbing things, but then there's always a way just to sort of remember that there's an enjoyable life out there. Yes, I know that there are lots of, and you know, I'm not talking about a life of wealth. I'm talking about a life of determining to make what you have happy.
Yes.
I mean, yes. You know, the chicken breasts that I ruined $4 worth of chicken breasts and cried the rest of the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But damn, it was fun, and it was a beautiful day, and today I went out and did some weed eating, because it was a beautiful day.
Oh, good.
And I'm going to do some more weed eating tomorrow. And
you know what?
We're in the middle of a beautiful week. I got Agnes and I have to sneak off to a trail and just do some wandering.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, just wander down a trail and back, you know, be quiet, let the birds chirp, that kind of thing.
Oh, gotcha. That reminds me when I used to live in upstate, you know, in Dutchess County in New York when I was in boarding school because, you know, we could just go out. We could, if you got a note from home, you know, you could just go wherever you wanted. We'd go to New York City or wherever, but we'd go off in the woods a lot. And, you know, you learn to be at peace. And I think you would like a meeting for worship. I don't know if you've ever been to a Quaker meeting for worship.
No, I haven't.
But you would, well, if you notice, all Quaker meeting houses, mostly, they look the same.
They threw out Agnes's multi-great-grandfather, and I'm not sure we'd be welcome.
I forgot you told me that. Yeah, you can. But the meeting for worship, honest to God, all you, it's like meditation. You're just in a room with everybody else, and everybody's quiet. And it might, like, the person in charge may say something in the beginning, and then everyone's quiet. And then when someone feels the spirit, they stand up and they make a statement. Sometimes it's political, sometimes it's personal. You know, it's just mainly whatever they've been thinking about. But, you know, you'll be shunned if you just start popping up all the time and saying dumbass shit. You know, you'd be asked not to come back. But...
Well, you know why they threw out Agnes's multi-great-grandfather, right?
I don't remember, but I'm looking forward to hearing it.
He started getting all uppity and saying that maybe slavery wasn't a good thing. And they hadn't quite gotten there yet.
Wow. And that was in
Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania.
Well, you know.
We're talking about the early 1700s. Yeah. You know, shit rolls downhill. The Puritans murdered the hell out of the Quakers, and that's why they wound up in Penn's Woods, and then the Quakers had to have somebody to shit on, and well, anybody that said that slavery wasn't okay, you're it.
Oh, two more things. Speaking of beer, you gotta hit up. Somebody has to send you some Coast from Trader Joe's because their store brand Coast this year is real. Like, I'm not a big fan.
Oh, no. Oh, Kolsch. Oh, don't do that to me. I can't. I'm not supposed to. I mustn't.
Man, but this batch this year is really, I'm telling you, it is. You know, because I like a bigger beer usually, you know, but it's 4.8, you know, it's 4.8, but it's really balanced. It's really good. Yes, God. It's, and everyone got better. I was like, damn, this is really fucking good. But I, you know, I had a certain amount of resources to spend, and I like that the Spring Prost, you know, is at Maybach, so I had to do that.
I'm gonna have to. So you think this is a Trader Joe's wide phenomenon?
I'm just saying that their store brand Coast, you know, they sell different beers, and at least in the ones here. But it's called Joseph Brow.
Well, I'm gonna be up toward D.C. again for the final interment of my aunt, and I'm gonna look at the map and see if there's a Trader Joe's somewhere between here and D.C. And I'll sneak in and at least buy a six pack and look at it longingly.
Yeah, and you can buy. Listen, you know, the beauty of the ones here, you can buy, and you know, they're the same everywhere. I guess they are pretty much. In terms of the way they price things, because what happens is that you can buy a single to try it, and it'll be the same price as if you bought a six-pack. And I noticed that the good beer has gone up dramatically in the past week. Oh, my God, I went to get a six-pack. What I wanted, because I have not had a New Belgium I don't like. A New Belgium, they just make really good beers, you know, to me. But Trader Joe's is the place to get your beer and cheese. I mean, you just can't. The cook everything.
Gotta be one in D.C. Gotta be one somewhere around D.C. Okay.
Now you know what?
I got a mission. I got a mission.
What?
I gotta find if there's a, you know, Trader Joe's near D.C.
Oh, you'll find one. I'm trying to think, because I was up there this summer in Loudoun County dealing with all those weirdo toll roads going to D.C. So I don't know if you'd be staying out where you usually stay. I don't know where you're gonna be staying, but let me see. You know what? I can but there has to be one in Maryland, man.
Oh man, I gotta tell you, but we gotta get out of here. But I just, as you and I were talking, smoking, Lottie wrote in. Lottie just celebrated a birthday.
Happy birthday!
Lottie's seriously scientific and serious. He's deadly in earnest in the kitchen, too.
Okay.
And he said, smoking delicate foods. You can't really hot smoke chicken breasts. They dry out too fast. But you can cold smoke them and then grill them. And he directs me to this thing over on Amazon. And whenever I order at Amazon, I go to smile.amazon.com, so a little portion of the proceeds goes to Cold River Mountain Watch, because I designated them as the recipient. Well, for $16, there's a tube that you fill up with the pellets, not chips. And it provides 5 hours of billowing smoke for any grill or smoker, hot or cold smoking, and what Lottie says is you light this little bastard and you set it on a cold grill with the chicken breasts in there or whatever delicate food, and you cold smoke it.
No way. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I got to own one of these things.
$16, that's worth trying. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's the tip of the evening. Thank you, Lottie. Thank you very much.
Look, Bob, we know how long it takes to get the fire right and get the smoke right. I mean, it just doesn't happen. You got to fucking get it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but these use those little pellets Brother Deacon Ace has been leaning on me, man. You got to get a pellet smoker. I'm like, that feels like cheating. But in this circumstance, it doesn't feel like cheating. Because it doesn't have a motor blowing through it or anything. This could seriously change the game.
So you would use that for the chicken and then use the traditional way for the ribs. Or a series of tubes in the smokehouse.
Oh, I'm still playing with that. I'm still playing with that idea.
I can see ribs from top to bottom in the smokehouse.
Whole pork loins with the ribs still on.
Oh, man.
See, yeah, this gets real dirty real fast. But hey, I got to get out of here. Hey, Todd, this has been magic, man.
Man, I appreciate it. We have to look for the positive in it, because we have to.
Gotta have a few. Gotta have a little grin. Gotta have a little happy. Gotta have a little kickback.
And watch what you eat. Watch what you eat, Bob.
Well, yes. I mean, I drew the line at, you know. I held up a piece of that chicken breast, and I held up a piece of gravel out of the driveway, and I banged them in each other, and the fucking piece of gravel broke. So I'm trying to pay attention here.
Okay.
And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa said, he said, you could be a hype man for the soba industry, Mr. Bob. You just made me go watch that damn video as I was listening.
It's going to be a thing. But you know what did it? What did it for me is that when you said you and Agnes, you know, everybody was quiet in the video, you know, their audience, and then it did the same thing to you guys.
Yeah, it just carried over.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful.
And when it was over, we just looked at each other and went, "I want that." Oh, it was magnificent. Just, you know. Of course, in college, I studied, you know, Japanese literature and translation and poetic forms and, you know, minimalist description and then, you know, went to law school and ruined it all. But that it just gets all over me. Oh, yeah, right. All right, Todd, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too, my friend.
It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Later. Our buddy Todd down in South Carolina. By the way, Shorty in L.A. says, the reason why Mueller is so slow, he's saying, wait for it. Because when he does, presidents confesses even more. And that's true. There's no leak coming out of the Mueller camp. He's just sitting there doing nothing. And Geezer Disgustus is coming apart a little bit more. Every blessed day. Who knows what tomorrow, prayer meeting Wednesday, will bring? Well, I can tell you this much. It's going to bring a $550 fundraising goal because we raised $50 last night and nothing tonight. And so hopefully there'll be a break. Yay! Hey, thank you, Renee. Renee found me the Trader Joe's in D.C. I will be there. Thank you, Renee. And thanks to all of you for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this little conversation. Thank you so much. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to all of our, each and every one of our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.